From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Democratic presidential contender Kamala Harris is launching her campaign with a bang. After a massive gathering over the weekend in Oakland, California, she headed to the key electoral state of Iowa. While there is much media coverage of her positions on domestic issues like healthcare and gun control, there's not so much emphasis on her foreign policy record. Now, Middle East expert and writer Stephen Zunis has published a new analysis entitled "More AIPAC Than J Street, Kamala Harris Runs to the Right on Foreign Policy," detailing in particular her uncritical backing of Israel over Palestinian human rights. Like many liberal Democrats, Harris appears to be progressive except for Palestine. In fact, a number of prominent Democratic operatives have formed a new pro-Israel lobby group whose goal will be to keep the Democratic Party firmly behind Israel. The newly formed organization is called Democratic Majority for Israel, and according to the New York Times, it is, quote, planning to wage a campaign to remind elected officials about what they call the party's shared values and interests with one of America's strongest allies. The group was formed out of concern that a number of younger and more liberal members of the party are increasingly pro-Palestinian. Dr. Stephen Zunis now joins me. He's a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as the coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He also serves as a senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus, a project of the Institute for Policy Studies. He's also an associate editor of Peace Review. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Good to be with you.
So let's first talk about Kamala Harris before we talk about this new Democratic lobby group. She has been a senator for not very long, and she, before that, was California Attorney General. One wouldn't expect her to have much of a record on foreign policy issues in general, would one?
No, especially since foreign policy issues have not been as front and center in recent years as they have been in some points in recent American history. At the same time, it was disturbing that her very first foreign policy vote, when she first came to Washington, she allied with Trump against outgoing President Obama in criticizing Obama for not vetoing a very modest UN Security Council resolution, which simply reiterated previous UN Security Council resolutions and a World Court decision and longstanding international law that Israel's colonization of the West Bank, the settlements, were illegal. She not only attacked Obama for not blocking that resolution, it was otherwise unanimous, but she went as far as saying that the United Nations should have no role in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In other words, questions of international humanitarian law and territories under foreign belligerent occupation should be none of the UN's business, which is bizarre because the UN was formed in large part just to try to settle such conflicts. And as she essentially said, it can only be decided through the voluntary agreement of the right-wing Israeli government and its U.S.-sponsored negotiations with the Palestinians, facilitated, of course, by the United States. And Trump, by that time, had already appointed a number of people who support the settlements, who actually raised money for the settlements, and oppose Palestinian statehood. So it led many of us to wonder, you know, whether this is indicative of a broader critique of international law and the role of international institutions like the UN.
So Obama, who was absolutely a friend to Israel, despite what Netanyahu and other pro-Israel figures have attempted to cast him as, was to the left of Kamala Harris, on at least at certain points on this issue. That's pretty remarkable. She has a strong background as a prosecutor, although, of course, at the state level, we're talking about a different set of laws than at the international level. Nonetheless, one would imagine that she would have an understanding of legal issues in general, right?
Sure. Someone of her intelligence who went to a good law school and all that should definitely know the basics of international law, that expanding your territory by force is a violation of the UN Charter and longstanding international legal principles, as is settling that occupied territories with your civilian population, especially, you know, given the very clear application of the Fourth Geneva Convention on the Israeli occupied territories, as the World Court had made clear in their 2004 ruling. But what's interesting is that, almost everybody in the Senate, both parties, could be considered pro-Israel. There are virtually none who have questioned Israel's right to exist or questioned the legitimacy of Zionism or anything like that. But what makes Kamala Harris somewhat of a minority is that she identifies more with the Israeli government, with Netanyahu, his policies, those advocated by the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. In contrast to a majority of Democratic senators, including people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who are more along the lines of J Street, those that support Israel's right to exist, but oppose the occupation and oppose the settlements, and believe the United States should take a firmer line in making a two-state solution possible.
And explain that reference to J Street, by the way.
Yeah, J Street is sort of the other pro-Israel lobby. They're kind of a centrist group, whereas AIPAC being a more right-wing kind of group.
And AIPAC stands for the American Israel Public Affairs Committee.
So, in other words, one would expect people like Kristen Gillibrand and Cory Booker, who are more in the center-right wing of the party, to support AIPAC, which they do. But Kamala Harris has been portrayed as more on the progressive end of the spectrum, and so this position sets her apart from more liberal members. Even Dianne Feinstein, who's fairly hawkish and she's considered a centrist, is a lot more moderate than Harris is. In other words, in support. Supporting this resolution and some others, Harris sided with the majority of Republicans against her fellow California Senator Dianne Feinstein. She sided, you know, with the House Republicans against Nancy Pelosi.
So this is an interesting position here that is unlikely, unfortunately, to come up in some of the campaign events that she's launching for herself. So does that worry you? Is she likely to be somebody who, if her position on the issue of Israel and Palestine is so hawkish, that you might be able to extrapolate that to other foreign policy issues, is she sort of a Hillary Clintonite, very strongly pro-war, but playing lip service to progressive ideals?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, she is in this longstanding tradition, I believe. And I mentioned this one vote because it seemed particularly egregious, and she kind of stood out as something of an outlier there. But I think in some of the other statements she's said, particularly on Israel-Palestine, but in some others, she does seem to be more along the lines of Hillary Clinton, or for your viewers who go back to remember the history of people like Hubert Humphrey or Scoop Jackson, those who had a fairly progressive domestic policy on a number of important issues, but maintain this rather hawkish worldview and the view of where somehow the United States and its allies could get away with things that other countries should not.
So why do you think she is this way? Is there anything in her background that we can use to understand her strong allegiance to AIPAC, to being more AIPAC than J Street?
I'm reluctant to speculate. I mean, you know, people come to these positions for any number of reasons. A lot of people are kind of steeped in this kind of a naive, liberal, idealistic view of Israel, maybe out of sensitivity around anti-Semitism. They kind of take a knee-jerk reaction and support Israel, no matter what. Some of it maybe through family connections and people who've influenced in her life. Harris's husband is Jewish, but again, that may not have anything to do with it, because again, sure. Her positions are to the right of most American Jews, actually, according to polls. Some people speculate it could be campaign funding, because right-wing Zionist groups do have a disproportionate amount of influence in terms of contributing to Democratic campaigns. At the same time, she is from California, where there's a far more diverse group of donors. And the main thing that's kind of odd about this is that, you know, some of the older Democrats, I think, seem to be stuck in this way. Sherrod Brown would be an example of an otherwise progressive Democrat who also has kind of a hardline position. But younger Democrats tend to be her age and younger tend to have a more balanced position. Indeed, there's probably no issue outside of GLBTQ rights where there's such a clear line in terms of public opinion regarding age and views towards Israel-Palestine. And what's also a big shift is among people who do care about foreign policy, Israel-Palestine is a big issue. It's just become what maybe Central America was back in the 1980s, for example, that it's or apartheid South Africa, that among the activist base of Democrats who tend to be on the left end of the spectrum, they're not talking about destroying Israel or taking hard line pro-Palestinian positions, as some do. The vast majority just take fairly moderate position of supporting a two-state solution when Kamala Harris, despite her lip service to having a Palestinian state alongside Israel, seems to be supporting all these policies that would make that impossible.
So let's talk about the fact that you have the first Palestinian American elected to Congress last November. That's Rashida Tlaib. And she became one of two of the first Muslim American women alongside Ilhan Omar to be elected to Congress. Rashida Tlaib wore a traditional Palestinian dress to her swearing-in ceremony. She's unapologetically, revels in her Palestinian-ness, if you will. And that has some Democratic supporters of Israel deeply worried. Cut to this announcement in the New York Times this week of this new organization called Democratic Majority for Israel. What do you make of this new lobby group funded by liberal Democrats who, again, are like Harris, seemingly progressive except for Palestine?
It is rather odd that such a group even needs to exist, because the Democratic Party, at least elected officials, tend to be much more supportive of Israel, even the Israeli government, than the majority of rank-and-file Democrats. And again, virtually every Democrat, with only a handful of exceptions, identifies as pro-Israel, who are on Capitol Hill right now. The question is, do they tend to ally more with the moderates, like those in J Street, the more hardliners, like in AIPAC? But just a brief perusal of what this group has said about themselves, they do tend to define pro-Israel as being pro-Netanyahu, pro those policies. And they really want to...
That's just assumed, right?
Yes. I mean, and just based on some of the statements and things I've seen and the members of Congress who have signed on to support them, and includes some very powerful figures, including the head of the House of Foreign Affairs Committee, the head of the Middle East Subcommittee, the Democratic Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, and quite a number of other influential Democrats, Bob Menendez, who's the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I mean, we're talking to influential Democrats here that seem to be trying desperately to keep to push the party to the right on the issue, just as more and more Democrats, according to polls, are taking more balanced or even more pro-Palestinian positions.
And so, of course, this is them reacting to that very move. There's also deep, deep concern about the spread of support on American campuses for the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, or BDS movement. Both Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have expressed support in some form for BDS. And right now we have this measure in the Senate, the U.S. Senate, supporting local governments pushing anti-free speech efforts to squelch the promotion of BDS efforts. Pretty remarkable. Is this the U.S. Senate's reaction to an increasingly more balanced popular opinion?
One could only assume so. I mean, this measure got the support of every Senate Republican and about half of the Senate Democrats. It had a lot of other measures, supporting military aid to Israel and a number of other measures. But Kamala Harris was in Iowa campaigning, so she missed the vote. But it's disturbing on a number of reasons, not just the free speech issues, but the fact that it redefines Israel for the first time as including territories controlled by Israel. I mean, currently, not a single U.S. company boycotts Israel, but a number of companies, socially conscious companies, say that we will not sell products or buy components from these illegal settlements. We will not provide Israeli occupation forces with certain materials that are used in violations of internationally recognized human rights. These are the companies that this bill is targeting, punishing socially responsible companies, which may have similar policies regarding Western Sahara or Crimea or West Papua or other occupied territories. So in many ways, this is not a pro-Israel bill. Indeed, J Street is very much opposed to it because they do not distinguish between the two. But it's a pro-settlement, it's a pro-occupation bill. And the fact that we did have half the Democrats support this is something that's quite disturbing. And I think it shows that the rank and file of the party have their work cut out for them.
How important was Michelle Alexander's recent New York Times op-ed right before MLK Day called Time to Break the Silence on Palestine? I thought this was a remarkable piece of writing, very importantly timed, and in, of all publications, the New York Times.
It's one of the most strong, in fact, probably the strongest worded op-ed I've seen by a regular New York Times columnist challenging many of the assumptions about Israel, the occupation, and U.S. support for the occupation. She pointed out correctly that a lot of people are intimidated to speak out. She used the analogy of Martin Luther King's speech at Riverside Church exactly a year before his assassination when he came out so strongly and forcefully against the Vietnam War and U.S. imperialism in general. He was universally attacked. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference contributions plummeted. It was a very dangerous step if you're talking about politically for his movement. And many of his top advisors, Clarence Jones, Andrew Young, others advised him against doing that for that reason. But now, of course, people look back and say it was a sign of King's courage and integrity in his prophetic voice. And by making this analogy, Alexander was saying, hey, we need to speak out about Israel and Palestine as well. I don't think it's just the influence of the so-called lobby, and the right-wing Zionist pressure groups. Because I think, as with Vietnam, we're talking about a systemic thing. We're talking about imperialism. We're talking about U.S. foreign policy and the kind of allies we support and things like that. So I think it's not just AIPAC and Zionists that are providing that pressure. I think we also need to be conscious that whenever you challenge certain systemic assumptions about the role of the United States in the world and our allies and the kind of behavior that we are willing to let our allies get away with, this is a problem that goes much, much deeper than just Israel.
I want to play for you and our audience, Stephen, a video that was published by this democratically funded lobby group, Democratic Majority for Israel, that aims to try to strengthen the support, uncritical support for Israel and Israeli actions among the Democratic Party. This is, you'll watch and hear a number of these folks involved in this, first establishing their progressive credentials before expressing their support for Israel.
I've been a Democrat ever since I understood that we get to choose our vote.
I've been a partisan Democrat all my life. I've been a professional Democrat for over 35 years.
I joined College Democrats of America 3 years ago, and I'm a proud Democrat.
I've lived the Democratic values my entire life.
I've been a Democrat my whole life.
I've been a Democrat for over 30 years. My parents would say since birth.
We believe that the vision and values the Democratic Party puts forward are the right ones for the United States.
I believe in women's rights,
LGBTQ rights, safeguarding the environment,
workers' rights, health care as a fundamental right,
voters' rights.
And I believe in United States support for Israel.
Our party has always supported the democracy in the Middle East.
The majority of Democrats are pro-Israel, but we need more.
I know that it's time for our generation to lead the cause for progressive values.
Israel is a progressive country.
A strong partnership with Israel means a stronger America.
I support progressive values, and I support Israel.
The Democratic Majority for Israel was founded to be a voice for pro-Israel Democrats.
We are proud the Democratic Party's commitment to supporting the state of Israel.
I am proud to be a part of the Democratic Majority for Israel.
I believe in a strong U.S.-Israel relationship.
Join us.
Join us.
Join us in the Democratic Majority for Israel.
If you believe in progressive values, if you believe in a strong U.S.-Israel relationship, you should join the Democratic Majority for Israel.
And that is an ad recently published by the Democratic Majority for Israel. The new president of this is a man named Mark Melman. Very, very interesting ad, that equates the support for women's rights, LGBTQ rights, voting rights with support for Israel. But Stephen Zunis, that whole idea of being progressive except for Palestine, is that even a thing? How can one really call oneself progressive if one doesn't recognize that Palestinians are human beings with the same rights as everybody else?
Exactly. I mean, there's a wide range of views within among those who identify themselves as Zionist, and I think it's wrong to assume that if you're Zionist and pro-Israel, you support the occupation, the settlements, the killing of civilians, the ethnic cleansing, the brutal policies we associate with the Israeli government. At the same time, the fact is that this group are not the more visionary progressive Zionists. These are hardline people who do support Netanyahu, who do support the Israeli government's policies. This group supported this anti-BDS bill, which, as I mentioned, was targeting companies that oppose the occupation settlements, those who are who simply want to have normal trade relations with Israel. So this is a pretty right-wing group, and for the very reasons you've mentioned, the idea of progressive except Palestine doesn't make sense, because you either support international law and human rights, you support self-determination, you oppose foreign military occupation. I mean, these things, or you don't. It's not something that you can start making exceptions for. And whether it be Saudi Arabia and bombing civilians in Yemen, Syria bombing civilians in their country, or Israel bombing civilians in Gaza. I mean, there should be a certain universal standards regardless of a country's relationship with the United States, or it's the ideology of its government, or the ethnicity of the majority of its population. These are basic principles here, and this group is basically trying to do the impossible, try to portray supporting a right-wing government like that of Netanyahu with progressive values. And frankly, I don't think it's going to fly. I think it looks like it's a pretty desperate effort trying to hold back the tide of a rather dramatic shift in public view about Israel and the U.S. relationship with that country.
So you're optimistic. I mean, the flip side of this equating support for Israel with other progressive values, the flip side is that if you don't think that Israel deserves support for its oppression of Palestinians, you're automatically labeled an anti-Semite, which is an incredibly difficult label to shake off. And careers have been destroyed because of this label, often unfairly, not always, but often unfairly. And I'm wondering if you think that that the Rashida Tlaibs and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omars will be moved by the pressure they are very likely already under from this lobby group and from others in their own party.
I don't think so, because they are represent constituencies that are majority people of color. Mm-hmm. Who are generally sympathetic with oppressed people of color elsewhere in the world, and they also see that they're young people. I think most people of their demographic in the Democratic Party are, you know, take similar positions, and they come out of activist backgrounds where the broad consensus was that, well, that was far more supportive of the Palestinians than the Israeli government. So they're the wave of the future. And we certainly should, you know, challenge real anti-Semitism whenever it and wherever it raises ugly head, even within pro-Palestinian circles. And while, you know, as in any kind of political issue, we need to be thoughtful and careful about how we communicate our beliefs and our goals, so to, you know, build broad alliances instead of unnecessarily alienating people, I don't think there's any reversal in this trend towards a more balanced position, one that opposes the Israeli occupation and one that believes that the Palestinians, no more or less than Israelis, have the right to statehood, to self-determination. I know it's getting more difficult in certain ways because many people, myself included, are beginning to wonder if it's too late for a two-state solution, you know, given just how vast the colonization and demographic change has been in the in the West Bank and the like. But regardless, the blind support of the Israeli government we've seen under Republican presidents and among too many Democrats as well is something that most Americans oppose now. And it's, I think it's very good that we do have these younger members of Congress who are speaking out on the side of this increasing numbers of Americans who are concerned about human rights, international law, self-determination, not necessarily out of an ideological opposition to Israel, but part of a consistent, principled opposition to repression anywhere.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Zunis, as always, for joining us. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Dr. Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. And he recently published an article in Foreign Policy in Focus entitled "More AIPAC Than J Street, Kamala Harris Runs to the Right on Foreign Policy." We'll link to that from our website. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.